Rachel, thanks for reading for us. It's really good to be together like this. I've put a question at the top of your handout, and it's going to come up on the screen as well. Little fun icebreaker to get us into this. If you were stranded on a desert island, who is the one professional that you would want with you? Okay, I'm going to give you some options. So would you like a professional Boy Scout? Would you like a global leader? A priest, a medic, or a celebrity chef, okay? And we don't normally do this on a Sunday evening, but why don't you just turn to the person next to you and tell them who you'd want with you? There is actually a right answer. The right answer is the priest. And actually, that's the right answer any day of the week, whether you're on a desert island or not. The main professional help that you need in your life today is priestly ministry. Now, you may be thinking, well, Kev's a minister type. He would say that, wouldn't he? But it's really true. And it's an idea that's gradually been taking center stage in Hebrews. I reckon there'd be a range of how we feel about the idea of priests in this room. Some of us are from religious backgrounds and cultures which embrace priesthood. You're familiar with the concept. I was leading a wedding 2 weekends ago. I wasn't here because I was in Cyprus leading the wedding of Lenya and Strock. That's them. Lovely, beautiful couple. But the interesting thing for this is the next slide. In the middle there is Lenya's dad. That's Lenya's dad. He's the one in the middle of the photograph. That's genuinely a photo from the wedding. I know it looks more like a scene from The Godfather or something like that. To be honest, I was a little bit scared of him. When I first met him at the pre-wedding party, you can probably see why. But we became firm friends, and Lenya's dad ended up spending most of the pre-wedding party with one arm around me, beckoning his friends over and saying to each one of them, "Hey, hey, guess what? He's a priest." And they said, "No, no, he doesn't look, yeah, 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 he's a priest. No, no." We must have had that same conversation 100 times. Including with Lenya's grandmother, who smacked me on the shoulder affectionately, I think it was affectionately, and announced to me that I didn't look enough like a priest, mainly because I wasn't bearded enough. So you can see I've been working on my little beard here, try and look a bit more priestly. Now, I felt quite uncomfortable with all of this for a number of reasons, but not least because I don't call myself a priest. We don't think that's necessary or even appropriate language for this role. You can connect to God without an intermediary like me. Maybe you've known priests who've abused their positions of power, and I'm aware that that might mean this evening that to hear that phrase could ring painful bells. And I think that partly how we feel about priests will be a question of how easy or difficult you think it is to connect with God generally. So I think it's fair to say that in middle class Western culture, we can sometimes be quite presumptuous that if he does exist, God and me are mates. Of course, I can march into his office whenever I want. Really? Would you be able to do that with the head of your university tomorrow morning? Or the head of the global corporation that owns your office or your favorite shop? There's a gap between you and them. How much bigger do you think the gap is between you and an almighty, all-perfect God? Have you had a sinful week again? Do you think that might have made the gap a little bit bigger? If you're Catholic or Orthodox here tonight, respectfully, you're wrong when you think priest and mainly think in your head about the bloke at the front of church in the dress. But at least you've understood that you need a go-between, given the gap. Protestants are very presumptuous when we don't think we need a go-between. Hebrews has really only been doing 2 things so far. It's told us how great Jesus is, and it's warned us of the danger of not holding fast to him. This is another chapter about how great Jesus is so that we won't drift away, fall away from our inheritance. And if you thought today's reading was a bit complicated, did anyone think that? Well, Hebrews agrees. Just glance back over the page to chapter 5, verse 10. You may find this encouraging. Hebrews 5, verse 10 talked about Jesus being designated by God as a high priest after the order of Melchizedek. Then verse 11, about this we have much to say, and it's hard to explain. Well, that's kind of encouraging. Or is it? Verse 11? Hard to explain, since you have become dull of hearing. Last week we heard that mature Christians hold fast by not being lazy hearers, but rather proactively seeking to listen and to grow. Maturity doesn't mean moving on from Jesus, but we will avoid drift if we swim deeper into him. And it is solid food, Hebrews 7. It's a rump steak of a Bible chapter, to be honest. But can I ask you, do you want solid food this evening? And we could just put on a video from the Jesus Storybook Bible instead, if you want. I could ask Mark to play some Sunday school choruses, some really cheesy ones. Or do you want to grow? Do you want to feel more anchored in your hope? Well, listen up. 6 verse 19 slides us into thinking about this. 6 verse 19, we have a sure and steadfast anchor of the soul, a hope that enters into the inner place behind the curtain, where Jesus has gone as a forerunner on our behalf, having become a high priest forever after the order of Melchizedek. Melchizedek has been mentioned three times now, and teaser trailers have been dropped in. Finally, we get to meet the international man of mystery that is Melchizedek. So point one on your sheet is that there's always been a hint of a better kind of priest. And this is strong meat in one sense, this, but kind of recommend that if you wanted to write a biblical thesis or dissertation, write about Melchizedek. Don't write about kingship or priesthood generally. There'd be way too much material that you'd have to get your head round. You could become a global expert on Melchizedek just by looking at two Old Testament passages, because they're the only other places in the Bible, apart from Hebrews 7, that he is mentioned. One is Genesis 14. Can you turn to page 10, please? And it's a bit tricky. This is going to come up on the screen because I need you to kind of be looking at both passages at the same time. So it may be easier to follow on the screen. I've printed Genesis 14 out. It's on page 10. And I'm just going to read the few verses that describe what Hebrews has just summarized. So Genesis 14, verse 17. After his return from the defeat of Chedorlaomer and the kings who were with him, the king of Sodom went out to meet him at the valley of Shaveh. That is the king's valley. And Melchizedek, king of Salem, brought out bread and wine. He was priest of God Most High. And he blessed him and said, Blessed be Abraham by God Most High, possessor of heaven and earth. And blessed be God Most High, who has delivered your enemies into your hand. And Abram gave him a tenth of everything. And the king of Sodom said to Abram, Give me the persons, but take the goods for yourself. But Abram said to the king of Sodom, I've lifted my hand to the Lord, God Most High, possessor of heaven and earth, that I would not take a thread or a sandal strap or anything that is yours, lest you should say, I have made Abram rich. Now, you might remember that reading if you were here over the summer when we studied Genesis. That's the first mention of Melchizedek in the Bible. First mention of any priest. Says Melchizedek was a priest of God Most High, and Hebrews 7 verse 4 says he was a great man, greater even than Father Abraham. We know that because in the Genesis reading, Melchizedek was the one conferring blessing on Abraham. Hebrews 7 7 picks up on that. Do you get the point? If I can guarantee you blessing, it means I am greater than you to be able to do that. And also, he's greater than the regular Old Testament priests, the Levites. They came much later from the body of Abraham. Hebrews 7 verse 9 makes the point. So they're even further down the pecking order of greatness. And some of the details about Melchizedek tell us how special he was. So someone who could be a king and a priest, ring any bells? King of Salem, Jerusalem. His name means king of righteousness and also a king of peace. Ring any bells? And most unusually, 7 verse 3 in Hebrews says, he is without father or mother or genealogy, having neither beginning of days nor end of life. That's a bit weird, isn't it? But yeah, when you look at the Genesis account, we don't have a record. Can we keep that up for the whole of this bit? That would be helpful. If we look at the Genesis account, you'll see we don't have a record of him being from any family. And that's unusual because family trees are all the rage in Genesis. And no end of his life recorded either. And there's a lot of debate by the scholars. Is this really saying he didn't have a genealogy? No parentage? No birthday? That's a bit sad, isn't it? You know, maybe we should have a Melchizedek party. Never had any of his own. No surname? Or is it that because we're not told those details in Genesis, it's as if? Did he really not die? Again, is it just that we don't hear anything about his death? Or did God carry him up to heaven? Or is he even the pre-incarnate Christ personified, some people think? Again, we don't know. But in the narrative of Genesis, his role is a bit like Doctor Who. He comes from nowhere, he does his thing and then goes off somewhere else. And the point is, by the fact that he doesn't come from the regular priestly family, not seeming to die, being a priest king, it all gives us a picture, a shadow of, guess who? Hebrews 7 verse 3. Having neither beginning of days or end of life, but resembling the Son of God. He continues a priest forever. He resembles, in a way, the Son of God. Hard to think of appropriate illustrations for how great Jesus is. He's so splendid and complex. Hebrews has an illustration. Great Melchizedek is an illustration resembling greater Jesus. Wouldn't it be beautiful to have a king or a president who was perfectly equipped to be a spiritual leader as well? Wouldn't it be precious to have a prime ministerial candidate whose manifesto was all about righteousness and peace? Wouldn't it be brilliant to have one like that who never got voted out or was term limited or died in office? Oh, back in the day, there was a hint of such a one. And it's quite interesting back in that part of Genesis. Abraham was made these really big picture promises about the world being blessed before it all homed in temporarily on the nation of Israel. Well, here also in this section of Genesis, before it temporarily homes in on the Levitical family of priests, a bigger vision presented of what a priest could be. Before we move on, I just want us to note from Genesis, and again, you'll need to look at this to see this, that Abraham trusts his priest. He quotes his priest Melchizedek to the king of Sodom. So dubious king of wicked Sodom offers Abraham a deal where Abraham gets to keep the possessions of Sodom. And Abraham's reply is, I have lifted my hand to the Lord, God Most High, possessor of heaven and earth. That was Melchizedek's phrase. That I would not take a thread or a sandal strap or anything that is yours, lest you should say, I have made Abram rich. He uses Melchizedek's phrase about God, possessor of God Most High. I.e., my priest here has just reminded me that the Lord of all will see me right. I don't need to make you my provider. Contrast with Abraham's relative Lot, who keeps drifting back to Sodom, to the world. And I mention that partly by way of trailer for the kind of practical application that we'll see when we get to Hebrew 11 onwards. And I mention it partly because if you think it's priest stuff, it's all a bit spiritual, it's about the spiritual bit of my life, but where's the practical stuff? Well, when you have guarantees of blessing from God Most High, confirmed to you personally by the priest of God Most High, that cashes out in very practical ways. For one, you can be very radical and released when the world offers you its material security and stuff. Are you that released from the need to be blessed by London, given the almighty promises you have? Well, more of that very tangible aspect of holding fast when we get to chapter 11. But as we move into point two, we're moving away from Melchizedek, the illustration, to fully focusing on the real thing. Are you still with me? Anyone want to go back to the Jesus Storybook Bible and the cheesy choruses? No, you're out of politeness, no one is nodding. But you can see maybe why I offered you that option at the beginning. Stick with this, there's real treasure here if we're not dull of hearing. So twice in verse 11 and following, we have quoted Psalm 110, which is the only other place in the Old Testament that you need to look up when you do your PhD on Melchizedek. And in that psalm, King David was prophesying about 1,000 years later after Melchizedek's little cameo. David says there's going to be another priest like him. The two quotes that are indented in page 1004, verse 17. You are a priest forever after the order of Melchizedek. Verse 21. The Lord has sworn and will not change his mind. You are a priest forever. Now that must have been a real puzzle, that psalm, when it went to print, Psalm 110, because a king who is also a priest in Israel, those were separate offices. And how can you even have a priest who's going to be a priest forever? That's the big thing that's picked up here in Hebrews 7, the forever aspect. Remember, resembling the Son of God, Melchizedek continues as a priest forever. Well, the Levi family of regular priests, they were not forever. Verse 23. The former priests were many in number because they were prevented by death from continuing in office. So imagine you're one of the Old Testament people. You have a priest. He's the normal kind of priest from the family of Levi. You get to know him. You trust him. He connects you to God. But you turn up one day at the temple, and sadly, he died out of the blue at the weekend. And you have to start again with a totally different priest. And that's annoying, but you can do that, can't you? Sometimes it happens in life. So your dentist moves on, your favorite hairdresser leaves town. It's a bit annoying, but you can start again and get to know a new one eventually. The problem's much worse here, though, than just you have to keep going through a new priest because they keep dying on you. They're meant to be helping with your sin and death problem. But they sin, and they die. Verse 27. He has no need, like those high priests, to offer sacrifices daily, first for their own sins, and then for the sins of the people. Imagine reading a gravestone that says, here lies the man who found the cure to cancer, died tragically of cancer. His death demonstrates that he didn't really have the cure. And these priests in their own sin and death demonstrate that they didn't really have the cure to our big problem with God. But God had promised a different kind of priest. Verse 28, for the law appoints men in their weakness as high priests, but the word of the oath, that's the David Psalm 110, which came later than the law, appoints a son who has been made perfect forever. Forever. Jesus isn't like the other priests, actually. Do you know, he couldn't have even qualified to be one because he wasn't from the right tribe. That's the point earlier that verse 14 is making here in chapter 7. A bit like the fact that you can't be a royal in the UK if you're not from the House of Windsor. Verse 14, it's evident that our Lord was descended from Judah, and in connection with that tribe, Moses said nothing about priests. You might say Jesus didn't have Levi genes, not Levi genes like these genes. He didn't have Levi genes, G-E-N-E-S. Sorry, that's a bit of a dad joke for a Sunday evening. But he did have the qualification to be a different kind of priest, a Melchizedek kind. Verse 16. He has become a priest not on the basis of a legal requirement concerning bodily descent, but by the power of an indestructible life. And as Melchizedek pictured, shadowed the idea of continuing as priest forever, Jesus really does. That's the big idea through this whole chapter. The detail is deep, the detail is confusing, but the repetition tool takes us to the big point. 7 verse 3, resembling the Son of God, he continued as a priest forever. Verse 17, you are a priest forever. Verse 21, you are a priest forever. Verse 24, he continues forever. And end of 28, a son who has been made perfect forever. Now, this is brilliant news, and verse 25 takes us to the cash value of this. So, guys, thank you for sticking with this, even though it's tricky, because here is why this is so great. Verse 25, consequently, he is able to save to the uttermost those who draw near to God through him, since he always lives to make intercession for them. That word uttermost can be translated at all times. In other words, again, forever. Now, if you were here a couple of weeks ago, we heard about Jesus' sympathy with our weakness as part of his priestly role. And it's very precious that, isn't it, to have a priest like Jesus who gets us, who, when he hears our loud cries and when he sees the tears welling up in us, says, I know how that feels. But how precious also not just to have a priest of sympathy, but of power, the power of an indestructible life. Because he lives forever, he can work for you forever as your forever go-between to God, making intercession for them. Verse 25 is kind of what lawyers do. A priest is kind of a lawyer, Jesus presenting your case before the judge. The Guinness Book of Records lists Lionel Luckhoo as the greatest defense lawyer ever. There he is. He defended, check this out, 245 consecutive murder cases successfully. Is that a little bit dodgy? 245 people in a row were charged with murder, and he got every single one of them off. Can I recommend, if you do decide you want to commit murder, Lionel is your man. Except there's only one problem, and you may be able to tell from the age of that photo. Lionel Luckhoo is dead, so he will be no help to you at all. And that's the way of the world, isn't it? Friends come and go. It's one of the sad things about London life. Do you remember the TV show, Friends? The theme tune, I'll Be There For You? Well, it was true for about 10 years, and then they all left town. I'll Be There For You? Even family members that we depend on die on us eventually. I'll be there for you. No one's there for us forever. There is one person, though, who will always be there for you. Jesus always lives to make intercession for you. And as I say, that's partly a lawyer thing, but that's a bit clinical as a thought, isn't it? I say that as a former lawyer myself. Interceding basically means he always lives to pray for you. We tend to focus on Jesus' work for us in the past tense, don't we, on the cross. We have great promises from him for the future. And we say, but I need something more tangible, something more dynamic to keep me from drifting now. Well, how's this for tangible and present and dynamic? Right now, Jesus prays to the Father for you. I don't know how your prayer life is for yourself at the moment. Jesus' prayer life for you is really good. We say, I'll pray for you. He always does. Help Kev. Keep Kev. Save Kev. Accept Kev, not because he deserves it or because I have mitigating excuses for his behavior. Because of these wounds, remember? Once and for all, I offered myself up for Kev. Guys, God is very holy. You need a go-between. And it's not that the Father is a mean judge reluctant to help. He's the one who's sworn on oath that Jesus will be your high priest forever. It's a bit like having Bill Gates and Mark Zuckerberg as joint guarantors that you're good for your rent on your flat. Jesus interceding for you. God the Father swearing on oath that Jesus will always be interceding for you. Like Abraham, you've got a sure bet God and a sure bet high priest. Why worry? And yet we do. I said we can be quite presumptuous about coming into God's presence, but do you know, it's very interesting. Have you noticed this if you've been going as a Christian for a while? Sometimes the more we go on in the Christian life, we actually get more anxious about our assurance because sin still entangles me. I'm weak and tempted, and am I really a Christian? The fears and the persecutions that might be ahead or present, will my faith fail? If I've been taught I don't need a go-between, then of course I'll be anxious if I think my only hope for keeping the relationship on the road is me. The reality is I need professional help spiritually. I need a priest. And in Jesus, I have the most brilliant one. It's not just that he died for me, or even that acceptance before God continues to be rooted in his finished work for me. All amazing. He always lives and prays for me. Do you know, I'm so glad I wasn't a lazy listener. I was really tempted for us to skip Hebrews 7 because it is a bit of a tricky chapter, isn't it? We could have gone on to the next thing and totally missed this amazing encouragement that Jesus is doing this for us right now. And so, point three, so what? What do we do? Well, interesting, we're not told to do anything in Hebrews 7. Partly makes sense. It's about what someone else has done for you. But this chapter is surrounded by the repeated applications of the whole letter. Hold fast to your hope. My hope is anchored because my priest is permanently anchored in heaven as my champion. But remember, I've put draw near as well, because that phrase hold fast always comes with draw near, which tells us that holding fast is not this static thing. It's something we always keep having to move into. And we'll say more about that in practice in Hebrews. It will mean the things you'd expect, like trust him, pay attention to him, pray to him. But basically, proactively, keep swimming towards him to avoid the drift. Draw near the throne of grace with confidence, remember, to receive mercy and find grace in help of time in time of need. We have this human tendency to overinflate the role of the guy in the robes at church, or the music leader, or our favorite preacher, or favorite one-to-one mentor who helps me feel close to God. Do appreciate their ministries, their tangible gifts to you, but they'll be gone soon. Lean deeper into Jesus. He always lives, not just to cheer you on. He will never get sluggish in this role. He'll never get bored or weary or entangled. He'll never die on the job, since he always lives to make intercession for you.